Broadcasting live from the KSHP studios in the heart of Las Vegas, Nevada. It's time to get on the right side of sports betting. It's time for the Odds Couple.
Welcome to the Odds Couple on KSHP AM 1400 radio, simulcast live and worldwide on Vegas Video Network. This show, The Odds Couple, is about professional sports betting. My name is Scott Pritchard, a professional sports bettor handicapper, joined as always by my co-host, Brett Grant. Happy Tuesday.
Happy Tuesday. Not a lot of sleep last night. Lots of excitement on the courts and then the ice.
Some extended games, Major League Baseball. We're going to get into that. We're going to recap last night's NBA basketball action, preview today's action. A lot to talk about. Let's get started with what say you, the San Antonio Spurs. Simply sensational last night. Well, at least the last 4 minutes of the game. They were actually down 16 points, 4 minutes to go in the game at home. Now, going into the game, they were favored by nine and a half points. And this is a team, the Spurs, that had won 29 consecutive times against the Golden State Warriors in San Antonio. Now, for the Warriors, the 30th time was not the charm.
Well, what a terrific comeback. But 44 incredible minutes by Golden State, and you're just amazed they couldn't hold on to that lead. And then in overtime, they had chances as well. They're up five in overtime, and the Spurs just kept coming back. And they did it, Scott, without Tim Duncan, who was not feeling well. He was stomach virus, still bothered him. Every time he looked at him, it looked like he was running to the bathroom, literally. And he just couldn't get it done for them. So they did it without him on the floor. And Steph Curry was just terrific for Golden State.
Yeah, Greg Popovich, the outstanding coach for the Spurs, said that Duncan has been fighting the flu. But you look at what took place in this game. Duncan, 35 minutes, but he grabbed 11 rebounds, 19 points. I'm just surprised. I kind of felt in watching the game with 4 minutes to go, down 16, that Popovich just said, listen, go to the locker room, regroup. But when he came back out, once they forced overtime, he didn't play. He played the last 5 seconds of each overtime period, but more as a decoy or more as a defensive player. But it surprised me a little bit because, I mean, his numbers were still there, a double-double, 19 points, 11 rebounds, 35 minutes.
Yeah, he was a Warrior in that regard last night. But you look at the Spurs with six guys in double figures. I mean, Danny Green was great. We knew Parker and Ginobili with the big shot late. You know, they just kept getting it from everybody, even Joseph with double-digit points yesterday. Where Golden State was relying so much on Steph Curry, Harrison Barnes with a couple of big shots. And I thought Andrew Bogut was very good. He was very assertive early and played very well for them. But what happened down the stretch for Golden State? They scored only 14 points in the fourth quarter.
Well, what's interesting is I've been calling Andrew Bogut out by referring to him as Andrew Bogut. But the fact is, my friend, in the deciding game in the last series against the Nuggets, he had 14 points, 21 rebounds. And last night, once again, he's a good shot blocker. When he's healthy, he's as tough as anyone. But looking at the Warriors, as you said, 14 points in the fourth quarter, but they scored 2 points in the last 4 minutes. Now, how is it? I mean, I have a couple of opinions. I mean, but how is it that the Golden State Warriors, as good as they are, how do you blow a 16-point lead in the last 4 minutes of a game?
Well, I think a big factor in that, and it's ironic because the announcers said, oh, that's really not a big deal because they're not going to need him the rest of the way. Klay Thompson fouled out on what was probably a bad foul when he had five fouls. Parker's driving to the basket. He basically bumps him out of bounds. He fouls out with their thing. I think their team's up by 9 or 10 points with a couple minutes to go in the game. He had 19 points. He's probably their second best player. And off the floor he goes, and the commentary was, well, it's not a good way to lose your, you know, to get your sixth foul, but they won't need him because they already got this one in the bag. Oops.
I give you a lot of credit. It's a great observation because really that's when things turned, okay? Right. The Spurs went on a tremendous run. I think it had to do with, well, it turned when Klay Thompson fouled out, and then Bogut sat down because Duncan left the game. Because, I mean, at that time, I'm thinking, hey, obviously they're going to get him some rest and get right dialed in for game number two. But they made a tremendous run, and I think part of the reason was, I mean, to overcome a 16-point deficit the last 4 minutes of the game, they outscored the Warriors 18-2. I think it had to do with turnovers, okay? But history has a way of repeating itself. As good as the Warriors are, they did this same thing the last 4 minutes of the game, game six. They were up, what, 16, 18 points against the Nuggets. Nuggets came back, right, made it a two-point game late with a chance to tie with 11 seconds to go. Young, inexperienced teams do what young, inexperienced teams do. In this case, they turned the ball over. The Spurs got some stops defensively, and they nailed a couple of threes. Momentum, everything changed.
That's a good point, and they nearly saved your hair, the Nuggets did on that way back against Golden State. But, you know, it's a good point because of the fact that they took a couple bad shots. They went in, tried to draw some contact, didn't get the contact, didn't get the foul. They're on the road where maybe you get those calls at home. Curry took a couple of shots he probably shouldn't have taken. Jared Jack chucked up a couple of shots he probably shouldn't have taken. And when you have that big lead and suddenly it starts getting smaller and you see the momentum. And I always love it when you're a fan and you leave the game and you hear the announcers as you're walking out of the building and they're down by eight. Wait, we got to go back into the game. So people are coming back into the game to watch it. And, yeah, I'm sure there were people on their way home going, come on, Dad, I can't believe you made me leave. It's double overtime. But it happens to all of us, right? But, yeah, give the Spurs credit. Again, when you are trying to knock off a champion, a team with a championship pedigree, and the Spurs are that team, you got to finish the job. And there's 48 minutes on the clock for a reason. So part of it has got to go to Mark Jackson as well for changing the dynamic of what his team was doing on the floor, putting Bogut on the bench, not protecting Klay Thompson. Why have him on the floor when you're up 18 points? Why have him on the floor in the first place? You didn't need him in that regard. You might have needed him later, and obviously you did. So you got to put some blame on Mark Jackson.
I agree. I mean, I love Mark Jackson. He's a very good coach, no doubt about it. What about Richard Jefferson? Richard Jefferson, yep, was a star for the New Jersey Nets. He signed with the San Antonio Spurs and was a complete fraud, a complete bust. They booted his tail out of town. He hasn't done anything. I don't know what happened to Richard Jefferson. He used to be a very good player, but last night, once again, he's a role player, bench player for the Warriors. But late in the game, when the Spurs were making that run, the one thing Richard Jefferson can do today, one thing, make free throws. He was fouled, went to the line, bricked both free throws. Right. He only needed one of the two, really.
And they were huge because that was a big turnover by Tony Parker. Jefferson got the steal. He's got a breakaway layup. Great defense. I forget who it was, came back and got the foul. Did not allow Jefferson to get the dunk or the layup and didn't make it a flagrant one or any of that kind of stuff. Just knocked the ball out of his hands. He went to the free throw line, missed both free throws. What would have been a duck, dunk or easy layup, which would have been crucial points for them, they missed two free throws.
You're listening to The Odds Couple, a sports betting show on KSHP AM 1400 Radio, beautiful Las Vegas, Nevada, live and worldwide, simulcast on Vegas Video Network. My name is Scott Pritchard, founder of PritchardsPicks.com, VegasInsider.com, and Tim Donahue's site, RefPicks.com, joined by the GM of KSHP, Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 11 a.m., Brett Grant. This is The Odds Couple. Every Friday, I'm joined by my good buddy and co-host, Anthony Padilla, who continues to be on fire. Thursday, special guest, I'm excited, my good buddy Dink, featured in the movie Lay the Favorite, starring Bruce Willis as Dink. He'll be with us during the hour on Thursday. I know you're excited because, like Dink, you're a big, big hockey guy.
Well, and I like the movie, so we get a chance to talk to
Great.
Dink just to make
I think
Scott
we're the
upset.
Only two people in the studio that liked the movie.
Did Dink like the movie?
Dink is the eternal pessimist, so okay. he was very disappointed that the critics didn't like it, but I think Dink likes it less than anyone. He was disappointed. So, but Dink doesn't like anything.
Okay, so now we know what's going on there. I'll be sure to make sure I don't impress him then. The one comment about the game again last night, because Anthony tweeted out last night as well about the fact that he thinks the Warriors are done after the game last night because of the fact they blew that big lead and they think it's going to be now a very short series. What's your take on what Anthony said?
Well, I might have to reevaluate my position because I have a strong opinion that the series is over. And the fact that Anthony tweeted that it's over, I might have to reconsider my...
Well, Anthony's never wrong.
Well, that's the thing, and I'm seldom right. So, I mean, we make a great team. That's why they call us the Odds Couple.
Exactly.
In this case, you have to... Had the Spurs lost last night, it would not have been good. But the fact is, it would be one game, and the Spurs have such a tremendous road record. The series was over before it began. And had the Spurs lost last night, the series is still over because the Spurs are going to win this. You're not going to beat them. It's just like the Miami Heat are going to destroy the Chicago Bulls. As much as I love the Chicago Bulls, the Heat will win that series. The Spurs will win this series regardless what happened last night. But the fact that they came back from 18 points down, 16 points down in the last 4 minutes is just going to make it that much easier for San Antonio. The series will go 5 games instead of 6.
Okay, and I kind of thought I was going to go 5 games myself. Let's talk about the other game just a little bit real quick. The Bulls pull off the upset, beat the Heat, and you saw 3.5 quarters out of the Spurs last night, and you saw 4 quarters out of the Heat. Was rust a big factor for those two teams after the monster layoffs?
Well, I look at the Miami Heat, and they're better than they were a year ago. Their bench is better. They picked up Rashard Lewis. They picked up Ray Allen. Their three-point shooting is good. They picked up the freak show from Denver, Chris Anderson, who's a very good rebounder, a pretty good defender. This Miami Heat team is better than they were a year ago, and they won the NBA title from a year ago. Now, there's always the question when you have an extended period off, rest versus rust. You talk to any NBA coach and players, they will take the rest at the expense of possibly being a bit rusty when they play again. Well, we saw that last night with the Spurs. They did not play as well as they have been. Conversely, the Miami Heat did not play as well as they had been. Doesn't change anything. The Heat are going to win the series against the Bulls. The Spurs will win the series against the Golden State Warriors. But with that game last night, before we continue with the Bulls Heat, and we want to get to that, we really need to continue to expand on what took place in that Golden State San Antonio Spurs contest, my friend, because Steph Curry, as good as he was, he scored 22 points in the third quarter. He owns the third quarter. But we've talked before, you die by the outside shot. They're a finesse team. Although they attacked the paint last night and they were having success, they go outside in. Most teams go inside out. The Spurs are a perfect example. They go inside to Duncan to open up the three-point shooting. The Warriors do the opposite. They force you to guard the three-point line, then they attack the hoop. So Steph Curry last night, 22 points in the third quarter, played every single minute of the entire contest. Fatigue is a factor. This kid does not get tired. I get that. But my research indicates that this kid Curry, you talked about they had 14 points in the fourth quarter. 0 for 8, Curry, jump shots. His last 8 shots, 0 for 8, because, again, it's a tough way to make a living. I'd rather go hard to the basket because I'm going to get a three-point play. I'm going to draw the foul. I'm going to get to the free throw line. I'm going to score. But, man, if you rely and die by the three-point shot, I mean, no one's better. I give him that. He was uncanny in the third quarter. But 0 for 8 on jumpers, his last 8 shots.
Well, that's a good point. And, again, you got to go back to Mark Jackson saying, why do you have a kid when you're up 17, 18 points? Playing 58 minutes in a double overtime game, why is he not getting some rest when you're up 16 points? At some point, you got to say, come on, get a break in the third quarter. I know you're on fire, but we got to get. But I guess if you do sit him down and the Spurs make that run, you can say, well, why did you take a break? He was always on fire, coach. But at some point, you got to get in your regular rotation. Why is he not coming out in the second quarter? Why is he not coming out in the first quarter? Just to get your normal rest.
See, I think that's a great observation, and I agree with that assessment. Here's the difference, my friend. Greg Popovich is the best coach on the planet. There's a big difference between Popovich and Carl from Denver.
Right.
Mark Jackson outcoached George Carl. My daughter Skylar, age 10, could have outcoached George Carl. Not to take anything away from my daughter, because she understands basketball.
Right.
But if you look
she's gone to the Phil Jackson coaching clinic a couple times.
If you look at Mark Jackson and what the Warriors did, I put it on Popovich because the difference was I said that Steph Curry scored 22 points in the third quarter. Well, then Popovich makes great in-game adjustments. He put the 6'7 star Leonard on him defensively. That's why he went 0 for 8 with the jump shots. So there you have it. Steph Curry, I hope you enjoyed game one because there's a new sheriff in town. His name is Leonard. He's a defensive stud horse from San Diego State, a former Aztec in his second year. He's a Bruce Bowen type, but he has offensive game.
And he can score. I was going to say, because he had a big day, at 18 points himself last night.
Well, then that's the reason they let go Steven Jackson, because of increased minutes for Leonard.
No, and it makes sense. I mean, you can't question what Popovich is doing in that regard. But I think you bring up a good point because they changed guys on him. But why did it take Popovich so long to change guys on him? Why let him score 22 points in the third quarter?
Well, and that's a good point because it has to do with the fact that you need Leonard offensively. But it's not like Steph Curry was getting wide open looks. I mean, they were setting picks and they had no choice but to double team. But then the team was scrambling and then they were getting slam dunk baskets. So Leonard is their best on-ball defender. But it's tough to – and he usually assigns the best offensive player for the opposing
right.
team. But to go 40 minutes and to expect to score 20 points in the game as well is asking a lot. So, I mean, he probably should have had him guard him a little bit. It's easy now to say, but in defense of Steph Curry, he just made some uncanny great, great shots.
No, he's a terrific player. Now, what do you do in game two? Do you have Leonard on him from the get-go, or do you do it kind of – I mean, at some point, you can't get 18 points behind every night and expect to come back and win, or 16 points behind. Not that the Spurs would do that because you think they would play better in game two, but there is a diminishing return of how far behind you can get or how much you can let Curry go off in a game before you try and harness him.
Well, I can tell you I believe in what Popovich does. I love Mark Jackson. He's a very good coach, but he's no Greg Popovich. And the thing you have to look at here is the Spurs, if the Golden State Warriors could not have played any better. On the road, up 18, up 16, 4 minutes to go, and you still lose. They have no shot in this series. The Chicago Bulls have no shot in their series. But at least the Bulls have defensive players. They have leaders, Carlos Boozer, and, of course, I love Noah. But I want to talk about the Warriors. We talked about they blew that 16-point lead because of turnovers. The Spurs got hot. The Spurs got stops. But the Warriors, and maybe this is where you look to Jackson a little bit. Why, when you're nursing a 16-point lead or a 10-point lead or an 8-point lead, why are you firing up jump shots with 13 seconds to go on the shot clock? Eat the clock.
No, that's a good point. And you saw the reaction that Greg Popovich had when Manu Ginobili took a shot with 11 seconds on the shot clock about 3 or 4 feet behind the three-point line in the midst of the comeback. That was a terrible shot. And then they came down, and I think Golden State got a layup, and Popovich called timeout and immediately screaming at Ginobili. I think that was the first question after the game was, Pop was yelling at you. He goes, well, it happens.
Well,
and then he obviously got the big shot later on to win the game.
Ginobili is a proven winner, and you take the good with the bad. I mean, he plays with reckless abandon. He only knows one way. And I love Popovich. I mean, he joked that he stopped coaching Ginobili years ago. He can't tell him anything. So you know what you're getting. I mean, you take the good with the bad. The guy is a star. He had a tough night last night. 5-for-20 shooting, 4-for-19 before he hit the game winner. But even in that case, and I want to talk about that during my Are You Kidding Me segment, Boris Diaw was wide open underneath the basket. So, I mean, Ginobili, you better make that shot because you only needed one to tie, two to win. Why would you throw up a tough three-point contested three when you have Boris Diaw, who it was his first game back. Boris Diaw was the man last night.
That's a good point, but he was pretty open, and you had 3 seconds to go, and he could have actually pump-faked it, gone in for a pass or a layup himself as well. But he's an outside shooter, and he was wide open.
Take a look at the replay. I've watched it 10 times.
The guy got
Boris
there.
Diaw, the reason Boris Diaw was right underneath the basket, and the reason the three-point shot was contested was because Boris's man went out to contest it.
Right.
So, I mean, he made it
fast enough.
But, I mean, it's about a 40% shot, a 40% chance that Manu is going to make that shot, but there's a 60% chance that he won't. If he dumps it inside to Diaw, you're going to win the game.
Is Diaw that reliable?
Diaw is an unsung hero. I mean, no one talks about this guy.
If I had to choose between Ginobili and Diaw, I'm picking Ginobili all day.
I would take Diaw. No one loves Manu more than me.
Right.
But if you're going to – when you need 1 point, two to win, and you've got –
that's the difference.
You've got Boris Diaw. If you have Diaw underneath the basket by himself, I'm telling you, watch the replay. He's all by himself, and Manu took it upon himself like he did with that bad decision. 13 seconds on the shot clock. You're nursing a three-point lead, and he fires up a half-court shot. It's insane. And he said after the game that he was tired. He couldn't go to the basket. It's like, that's selfish, man. Throw to somebody else.
Right.
So, I mean, it worked out well because it ended well for the Spurs, but, I mean, that was a big-time money shot. I love Manu Ginobili, but that was – I'm just saying it's a good thing he made it.
Well, when you blow a lead of that size, as much as you might want to credit the Spurs, you got to blame the Warriors for not finishing.
No,
there's no way you lose that game.
And that goes back to the Warriors are who they are. They're young. They're inexperienced. They are not proven. They lack playoff experience. They grew up. They went from boys to men per what they did with the Nuggets. But I'm not taking anything away from Golden State. I love this team. Mark Jackson's a very good coach. Steph Curry, no one is better shooting the ball. Klay Thompson is the real deal. Jarrett Jack plays extremely well. They're doing this without one of their main clogs, David Lee.
I was just going to ask you. David Lee did play against Denver towards the end of that series. Why not use him last night a little bit?
The injury report that I received yesterday said that David Lee was probable, but in parentheses, limited minutes. Now, it was a gimmick when he played. It was just an emotional thing in Oakland to have him play a minute and a half. He was 0 for 1 shooting. He did grab a rebound. I mean, he may or may not play. My question is, hey, man, he hasn't played in how long? It takes a while to get back into playoff. I mean, the playoffs are a whole new animal. So, well, I mean, I don't know.
He's played
know.
A lot more recently than Derrick Rose has played.
Well, true. But even when Derrick Rose, if and when he comes back, is he going to be tough enough? Because, I mean, to throw you right into the mix of the fire, even Tracy McGrady, he's healthy, he's hungry, he's ready to go. He's played 5 minutes the entire postseason for San Antonio.
Well, because the Spurs have 11 guys that are better than Tracy McGrady.
Well, that's true.
That's the main reason why.
Actually, the Charlotte Bobcats might have 11 guys better than Tracy McGrady. But now let's go ahead and talk about the Chicago Bulls. Great win last night. They were a 12-point dog taking on the Miami Heat, the defending NBA champions, and they went into Miami game one and knocked them off. How impressive is that?
Well, extremely impressive. And you have to look at, again, a team that was challenged in a 7-game series in the Bulls. That was obviously in game mode, used to a hostile environment, going against a Miami team that hadn't played in well over a week. So it was a rust versus a rest situation for Miami versus a team that's coming off a very emotional Game 7 win, and they just carried that over into Game 1 against the Heat.
The Chicago Bulls on the road last night, knocking off the Miami Heat as a 12-point dog. Now Game 2 in Miami, point spread. 12. Miami Heat favored by 12. The Spurs, game two, after being favored by 9.5, they won in double overtime last night, 129-127. Game two, point spread, 8, San Antonio.
So are you surprised that the spreads have changed?
Not really. I mean, the Heat, it's the same. They were favored by 12 last night. They're favored by 12 in game two. The Spurs, because of the Duncan, not 100%. Splitter, their starting center, did not play for the second consecutive game. He's questionable for game two. And the Warriors, the fact that you said, and you're right, they controlled the game. That's why they're shading the Warriors a little bit, even though I wouldn't be surprised to see the Spurs blow them out, because the Spurs could not have played any worse up until the last 4 minutes of the game, and they still won.
Right. Well, I mean, the Bulls, when you look at what the Bulls had on the floor versus what Miami had on the floor in the game last night, just a terrible shooting night for the Heat, 30-something percent they shot from. Not like the Bulls were shooting, you know, lights out. They were only 43%. But Nate Robinson was huge last night for the Bulls.
Very impressive, down the stretch especially. I mean, I like guys like Nate Robinson. I like guys like Ty Lawson, guys who are not afraid to take the big shot. Jarrett Jack for Golden State, same thing. I mean, it was a one-point game. He hit a big two-point jumper in the lane about 10 feet out to put his team up three before Danny Green hit the game-tying three late in the contest last night. Now, we want to keep the show moving. This is the Odds Couple on KSHP AM 1400 Radio, Las Vegas, Nevada, live and worldwide, simulcast on Vegas Video Network. My name is Scott Pritchard. I'm a professional sports bettor handicapper featured on my site, PritchardsPicks.com, also VegasInsider.com, RefPicks.com. Brett Grant is my co-host. He's here with me Monday through Thursday, 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. Every Friday, I'm joined by Anthony Padilla, who has been on some kind of a roll with a capital R. He has not lost a game ATS against the spread, documented here since January. I know this because he tells me and reminds me every day. I guess I would be loud and proud, too.
Absolutely.
We're going to move along with Spin to Win. This is great. I'm going to bring in the wheel, and we have a big game going on in the NBA playoffs tonight. The Oklahoma City Thunder, they're at home, game two, taking on the Memphis Grizzlies. The point spread for this game, the Thunder favored by 2.5. Now, game one, the Thunder won. 93-91 is a 3.5-point favorite. So we're going to spin to win. What that means is the smart better bets with their head, never their heart. Emotions cloud judgment. I'm going to spin it. I'm going to be forced to make an argument for either team. Brett automatically takes the other side because the smart better, again, bets with their head, never their heart. Who do I have?
You've got the Grizzlies.
Memphis Grizzlies. This is easy. Zig zag. We talked about the zig zag theory. The Memphis Grizzlies lost game one. Forget the point spread. They covered the point spread, but the zigzag theory, I believe it went 7-1 in the first round of the playoffs. We talked about this on the odds couple of weeks ago. The Memphis Grizzlies, going into this series, favored to beat the Thunder. The Memphis Grizzlies up 3 with a 116 to go in the last game, ended up losing by 2, but they did cover. Memphis going on the road at Oklahoma City, for all intent and purpose, looking to split 1-1 tonight. Big, big game because they're getting 2.5 points. I expect the Grizzlies. They had the game won last time. They're a better team than the Thunder. They're better. The thing that the Thunder have going for them, they're at home. But the Memphis Grizzlies, what I love about this team is defense. They play the half-court defense better than any team in basketball. Don't take my word for it. The numbers don't lie. For the course of the regular season, the Grizzlies, 48 of their 80 games that had a total, there were 82 games total, but 80 games had a posted total. 67% of their games went under the total. 48-32 under. This team will control the tempo. That's what's great about playing great half-court defense. You can do it at home. You can do it on the road. Whereas the Warriors, a shooting team, a finesse team, you live by the outside shot. You might get those to fall. You'll increase your shooting percentage at home, but not so much on the road. The one thing you can do on the road, at home, is play good, sound defense. Memphis Grizzlies plus 2.5 is a bargain. Ring up the ringer. See the cashier.
Well, I think on the other side, if you look at the Oklahoma City Thunder, only laying 2.5 points at home is a great value spot for them, even though they didn't cover in game one. So you might say, well, the zigzag might be in favor of Memphis because they lost the game. You could use it as well from a point spread standpoint and say, hey, they didn't cover, so now Oklahoma City's turn to cover the spread. And Memphis, remember, Scott, lost the first two games of the opening round series in Los Angeles to the Clippers and then won the next four games. So I don't necessarily think it's a critical game in which Memphis has to win the game. I think they can lose and still come back and win the series. And Kevin Durant has just been terrific. I think it's 34 consecutive playoff games where he scored more than 20 points. And it's got to be 7 or 8 in a row where he scored more than 30 points, averaging 33 points a game. You still, even though you might front him, and you might double-team him, and you might triple-team him, and you might deny him the ball, he still scores 33 to 35 points. And, you know, guys like Reggie Jackson doing a good job, Cephalosha playing very good defense, made a huge defensive play at the end of that game to key the Oklahoma City win going through. I got one of the best teams in the NBA on their home floor, laying a very low number. I like my odds there.
I want to clarify the zigzag theory. I've been sharing this theory for years, and it's amazing how the point spread, when we talk about zigzag, we're talking about in game one. Forget the point spread in game one. The point spread doesn't mean anything. Right. The losing team, you bet that team with the points in game two.
Okay,
against the numbers. So there is no zigzag in regards to ATS against the spread. And you'll see what we're seeing now. The sports books are aware of the zigzag theory. And again, they shade it our way. And yet it still went 7-1. Now, in this case, a low number, 3.5, in game one, same two teams playing, but they shaded it 1.5 to a point. There are a couple of twos out there tonight, but mostly it's 2.5 with the Thunder.
Is it only applying to a team getting points?
In
also,
my
like Miami losing yesterday, their next game, would that be a zigzag opportunity?
It would.
You have to lay 12.
It would, exactly. Okay. It would, but again, it's conducive to the point spread. So if a team loses straight up, because at this late date, my friend, if you're in the playoffs, you're in the top 16 teams in the league. So these are professional basketball players. So if they lose a game straight up, They're going to come back. They're going to make adjustments. And so you take that team, ATS, against the spread. It's been documented. It's been proven for years. Now, the sports books have caught up with it,
right,
but it still wins, even though they shade it by a point, point and a half. But, yeah, now that's a great point because the Miami Heat, better team than the Chicago Bulls. The point spread, for all intent and purpose, was accurate. They're about 12 points better than the Bulls at home. But the Bulls won the game straight up. So does that mean you make it a 5? No, that's insane. They're still a 12-point favorite in game 2, but they're going to come out, make some adjustments, be more focused, be more hungry. Bulls have already accomplished their goal and objective, which is to get a split in Miami. They're not going to lay down. But if I were to play this game, I would be on the Heat minus the 12. And if I lose, I lose. I'm not afraid to lose.
Right.
Because, again, the zigzag theory in the first round, 7-1, if I'm not mistaken.
And the other game tonight is the Pacers and the Knicks. Knicks lost at home in game 1. So, again, you're saying the play should be on the, if you're going to play the game, Knicks minus the points.
Based on the zigzag theory, and I'm not saying blindly just go with the zigzag theory, okay, but it should be one of a myriad of tools that you use in handicapping a game. I would not blindly lay 6 because it's 6 everywhere. I would look to steal a minus 5. If I have to lay 5.5, I would, but I'm a dog player, so I respectfully will pass on the game. But you, as a sports bettor or a professional sports bettor, the more you know, the more you grow. That's why I'm round. You're listening to The Odds Couple on KSHP AM 1400 Radio. I'm Scott Pritchard, joined by Brett Grant. We're going to take a quick commercial break. We'll be right back.
Have you ever thought you should be on the radio? Or have you considered doing an online video show or podcast? If so, now is your only chance to do both at the same time. KSHP and the Vegas Video Network have teamed up to provide the only multi-camera broadcast quality video and live radio simulcast in Las Vegas. And instead of having your show played at some ungodly hour, the KSHP Vegas Video Network partnership is producing shows that play from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Monday through Friday. Imagine having your own radio show broadcasting to the entire Las Vegas Valley, and combine that with an online presence that is viewed in all 50 states and 150 countries, both live and on demand. This is a first and an outstanding opportunity to give voice to your business, your ideas, and your talent. If you'd like your own show on KSHP and the Vegas Video Network, contact us today at 221-1200. That's 221-1200.
Welcome back to The Odds Couple on KSHP, AM 1400 Radio, beautiful Las Vegas, Nevada, Sin City, loving every minute of it. Been here for the past 18 years. Check back with me in 35 more years. I'll still be here. I'm hopeful that we'll still be doing The Odds Couple.
That'd be good.
We would love for you to reach out to us. Email us at oddscouple at Vegas Video. Actually, it's oddscouple at VegasVideoNetwork.com. Email oddscouple at VegasVideoNetwork.com. Also, we would love to hear your voice on our show. Go to our site, Vegas Video Network. On the right-hand side, a red bar. Click there. Middle of the page, a green bar. Start recording. Check us out. Live chat, it's up and running. We would love to continue to field live chat questions. The studio line is open, 702-221-7283. You want to talk sports, sports betting, 221-7283. If you do miss us live, still reach out to us, Vegas Video Network, iTunes, YouTube, Roku. Sports, sports betting, you don't have to look far to find frustration. Are you kidding me?
Well, I'm gonna go to the Miami Heat and the Chicago Bulls last night, and the Bulls JV team. Last time I checked, Bulls JV 93, the greatest team ever assembled in the history of basketball, 86. So I got to give big props to the Bulls with their intensity, their desire, their determination, their intestinal fortitude. My dad used to always joke with me when I was a kid on our way to my hockey games at 6 o'clock in the morning. Did you bring your skates? Did you bring your helmet? Did you bring your gloves? Did you bring your determination? Did you bring your fortitude? I'm like, I'm not sure what those are, Dad. Yeah, but the Bulls last night, if you look at what they had on the floor versus what the Heat had on the floor, it was a JV squad for the NBA. And yet their desire and their determination got the job done. And you got to love Yannick Noah's son. Joakim Noah is just terrific. He actually defended Derrick Rose, by the way, after the game from criticism of why he's not playing. So I'll give him credit for that as well. But guys like Jimmy Butler, who was a great player at Marquette, rising up, scoring 21 points yesterday. You look at what they had on the floor. Nate Robinson, obviously a great day. You know, Taj Gibson, Najir Muhammad, Marquise Teague. These guys all contributing in nice ways yesterday for the Bulls, and just a huge effort for them. And it's basically without Luol Deng, without Kirk Heinrich, without, obviously, we know, in Derrick Rose. Missing those three guys to beat, as I said, the greatest team ever assembled in the history of basketball, and to beat them handily last night like the Bulls did. Are you kidding me?
Very impressive. E and E, energy and effort. The Chicago Bulls, if this was the NCAA College Basketball March Madness Tournament, the Miami Heat would already be home. If this was the NFL playoffs, the Miami Heat would already be gone, one and done. But that's what's great about the NBA. The better team almost always wins because you have to beat that team four times within a seven-game series.
Well, the thing about these two teams are, the Bulls know that they, for whatever reason, the Bulls get under the Heat's skin. And they were one of the few teams this year, the Pacers were another, that had a winning record against the Miami Heat. And they improved that record without three of their star players.
How do you not love this Bulls team based on what you just said? They're not at 100%.
Right.
This is, and there's no
They're
chance.
They're not at 60%.
There's no way, there's no chance that this Heat team looked past the Bulls, knowing the Bulls snapped their 27-game winning streak
right.
just about a month ago. You're at home. You're favored by 12. You're healthy. You're hungry. You're big man on campus, and the Bulls come in and knock you off.
Well, the Bulls play with a chip on their shoulder, and you got to give credit. As much as we talked about Mark Jackson blowing the lead, and what Tom Thibodeau does with his team, and you see it with Memphis, with Lionel Hollins, what he does, they bring their defense every night. They play hard. They play as a team. They play for each other. I'm not necessarily a fan of anything Chicago. I'll be honest with you. I grew up in St. Louis. I don't like things Chicago, although my wife and daughter are from Chicago.
But nice recovery.
I like those too. Okay. My in-laws,
not so much.
I'm just kidding. But this team, you're right, they're hard not to like because of the fact of the way they go out and play the game. They give you that lunch pail effort.
Winning on the road last night as a double-digit dog, the Bulls get it done in Miami. The Heat, I mean, it's nice. Congratulations, Chicago. You have no shot at beating the Heat another three times in the next six games. And Golden State, you have no shot of beating the Spurs four times now in the next six games. So, again, you don't even have to watch these games. I've seen
Thanks
the script.
Thanks for coming.
I've seen the script. All right, I've seen the script.
You skip to the end?
I just do. It's the same. I just fast forward. And
do you read the last page of every book you out and buy?
Pretty much. I mean, yeah.
Well, now you can't do that because you get them on your iPad or your reader, and you're just, you know, you can't get to the last page without.
Well, that's in today's world. It's true, but I mean, I love books. I just once I start, I just can't stop coloring.
Exactly. Inside the lines or no?
Never inside the lines. I break as many rules as humanly possible.
All right.
Except on this show. It's very structured, very formatted. Everything is rehearsed, very canned. As you can tell, this is totally rehearsed.
Very scripted. As you can see, here's my script right here.
My Are You Kidding Me segment has to do with Manu Ginobili. This is what I do. This is what he says to Greg Popovich when Popovich tries to coach him. This is what I do. And it is what he does. I mean, the guy's 37 years old. He's a star player. Plays with reckless abandon. I love him. The appeal that you have for Ginobili is also the curse of Ginobili. Last night, perfect example. I mean, 4-for-19 shooting, and yet he fired up the game-winning three. This after he single-handedly cost the team the victory. They were up three with about 40 seconds to go, 13 seconds left on the shot clock. He fired up basically a half-court shot because he was too tired, he said. Too tired to go to the basket. Are you too tired to maybe pass to one of the other four stars for the Spurs? So, fortunately, he dodged a major bullet. But even then, Manu Ginobili, this is what I do. Hey, Boris Diaw, 39% three-point shooter, unsung hero, plays good defense. He's underneath the basket. His man left him to go contest the three-point shot. Manu passed the ball. Instead, he fired up a high-arcing shot. It went in. Good thing. But if you remember right, when they were up three, Manu Ginobili forced up that terrible three-point shot, and right. You know Popovich was upset? Well, guess what? The first 2 minutes of overtime, who's on the bench? Who's not playing? And they were down five. They brought Manu back in with 3 minutes to go. I'm sure that's Popovich's way of saying, listen, stay within the realm of my system or you're going to be sitting next to me on the bench.
Well, it might have been that he's 37 and he was gassed as well, and it's just a chance for him to get a break. But when you look at the shot at the end, the game winner, what, 3 seconds or so to go, if you make the pass, and let's say it's not a perfect pass, or DL bobbles the ball, does he get it off in time? And I understand he was open, but so was Ginobili. The guy came out crashing to him. He got there late. It was, you know, when you're a shooter, you only need a small window, especially in the NBA, to get that shot off. If you catch it, you're going to have to make a dribble, then make the pass. Then if there's a chance the ball's bobbled, all that stuff doesn't necessarily go through your mind, I'm sure. Ginobili's like, I got the ball, I got to shoot it. And I think it was, I think the interview afterwards was, it was just a reactionary thing. He felt he was wide open. I had to take the shot. And that was the play. I guess the play was set up for him as well. It went in. And I guess if you look at it that way, it went in, and so all is forgiven.
It went in, and all is not forgiven. Because it went in, but that's interesting. Because a lot of people think they drew up a play for Ginobili. That's not true. In fact,
did
Ginobili said, no, they did not.
Okay.
But I mean, I understand why a lot of people think so. He said after the game, which is funny to me. I mean, he's a great three-point shooter, but Popovich was scorned. He was upset. And Ginobili said after the game that the play was not, he wasn't even involved in the play. And it was supposed to go to Tony or Boris.
Okay.
So either Parker or Diaw. And they told Ginobili specifically, just go set a pick and get away from the play. That's what they told him.
Right.
But the players, two guys, Jarrett Jack messed up on the play. Jarrett Jack, if you watch the replay, when they set the pick, Tony Parker, I mean, he's a marked man. He has a big old target on his back, and understandably so. He's a star player. But Jarrett Jack and the other defender, they're guarding Tony Parker 35 feet from the basket.
Two guys.
And that's where Ginobili ran to the three-point line. And they and in defense of Ginobili, who did not pass to Diaw for the duck underneath the basket, with about a minute to go in the game, he had a nifty bounce pass to Diaw. But Diaw wasn't moving or cutting to the basket. It led to a fast break opportunity the other way.
He knew. I couldn't trust him.
Manu knew not to pass the
exactly.
ball.
Exactly. Well, I think the other thing defensively, you bring up a good point, was I'm sure Mark Jackson was telling his team, we're switching all picks. We'll switch all picks. Well, one of the Warrior players, and I think it was Jarrett Jack, did not get picked. So somebody else got picked. So he went to switch along with to go to Parker. Well, Jack didn't get picked, so there's no reason for him to go look for somebody else because they didn't pick him. And now you left Ginobili wide open.
Exactly right. I mean, if you're double-teaming someone, especially 35 feet from the basket, someone is open. I remember being at Chicago Stadium when Sam I.M. Perkins and Magic Johnson and the Bulls, and I believe it was the game
Lakers
one, the Lakers had won. And I remember during the post-game press conference being at the game, I remember Magic Johnson or Sam Perkins saying it's a simple game. It was Magic Johnson, okay? And he said, listen, they double-teamed me, so someone is open. And he passed off to Perkins, who always looked like he was stoned. You know, sleepy, droopy eyes, and one of his favorite things to do was to sleep. But he was a dead-eye three-point, a big guy, 6'9", but he could always knock down the three-point shot. Right on.
Yeah.
The Bulls came back to win the series, but the Lakers won that game one because, again, it's a simple game. If you're double-teamed, pass the ball.
Well, and great identification by the inbounder for the Spurs last night to see the open man and get in the ball. I'm not sure who made the pass.
Actually, I'm glad you brought that up. Leonard made the pass, but what's interesting, the reason Ginobili was so open is he out-juked. He faked the pass inside to Diaw, and that everyone collapsed. Bam, fake, and then he went to Ginobili, and he nailed the three, and it was such a high-arcing shot. It had to be because the guy came out to contest it. But again, you had time. There were 3.9 seconds to go in the game, and Mark Jackson, I think, erred here a little bit. They had a foul to give, but why would you foul in half a second?
Right.
I mean, foul after 1 or 2 seconds to where you only have a second and a half to get the shot off. Ginobili had plenty of time. 3.4 seconds is an eternity.
It is.
But Leonard, no one's talking about this. Check out the replay. Leonard pump faked a pass inside and then threw it wide to Ginobili, who nailed the three-pointer. So that's what I love about NBA players. I mean, mental toughness, these guys know. It's amazing to me how many times the only way you can win is if you make a three. The opposing team knows it. They're going to deny. And you're only going to make that 35% of the time. But it's amazing to me how many times these players step up with millions of people on TV watching and 20,000 fans there, and they still make it.
Can we talk about the most asinine rule in the history of sports?
Sure.
Let's call a timeout and move the ball up to three-quarters court, up the court, so we get the ball way up there. It'd be like calling timeout in the NFL saying, hey, we're at our own 35-yard line. I'm going to call timeout. And now we get the ball at your 35-yard line. Now we're in field goal range. Why? Where did this rule come from? Why is it in existence? I never understood it. I'm not an NBA aficionado like you are. I just think it's like, oh, yeah, you scored a basket, but because I called timeout, I get to move the ball up three-quarters of the way up the court. I don't understand that rule, why it's there, and it just makes no sense to me.
I'll let you talk about that if you let me talk about the instant replay in basketball and how it came back to bite the Spurs in the tail. There's an unwritten rule in the NBA. If you have inside position, if you're defense and you have an inside position and someone goes over your back and the ball goes out of bounds and it's off you, the defender, but because you had position and the guy climbing your back
forced
it out of bounds, it's going to go to the defensive team. Last night late, that's exactly what happened. Someone went over, I believe it was Leonard's back, and the ball went out of bounds, and it looked like it went off Leonard, but they gave it to the Spurs, which was the right call, because if you're not going to call over the back, you have to give the ball to the Spurs. It happens all the time. But wait a minute, they wanted to make sure. So what they did is they checked the replay, and what does the replay show? The replay shows that the Warrior player went over his back, clocked his arm. There's a foul there, but that's not reviewable.
Right.
And it was off Leonard. So that is what annoys me. It's too much technology. Too much. And
if you're going to go back and review things, you either review everything or you review nothing.
There's a spirit of the rule. In that case, I would have awarded the ball to the Spurs, not just because I have a big fat future on the Spurs and I can't be objective.
You say, hey, I missed the foul call.
Right, exactly. I missed the foul call. It's off Leonard, but we're going to still give the ball to the Spurs. Instead, they gave it to the Warriors, and I believe they scored. So, I mean, there was a... So, I think they're overplaying their hand sometimes with the replay.
I appreciate you not answering my question, though.
Well, no, I wanted to, okay? I wanted to answer your question, because that's only predicated on if they don't advance the ball. But it seems a little bit illogical. If you call a timeout but don't advance the ball, why are you going to be able to move it 40 feet or 50 feet and inbound the ball in your front court? It seems illogical. I mean, it's great for the fans because...
It's horrible for the defensive team.
But it penalizes the defensive team.
It's like offensive pass interference. The poor defensive back is helpless almost always in that situation. And here you're putting the team in the defensive end. Why should they not have to come up the floor? Why should I not be allowed to press if I'm down by 3 points or up by one or the game's tied? Why would I not want to be able to force them to use some clock coming up the floor?
Based on the feedback I've been getting on the show for the Odds Couple, people are in love with the NBA playoffs. We love baseball, hockey. We only have a 60-minute show, so we're going to tackle the hot topics. And from a sports betting standpoint, where there's money, I do want to acknowledge some baseball because we do broadcast the Dodger games here on KSHP AM 1400 radio. We have some dead over teams in baseball. The Colorado Rockies have gone over six consecutive times. The Tampa Bay Rays, my good buddy Brett, riding that streak. He's a smart man. I say ride the streak. Ride the wave. We were opposite each other yesterday, and one of us was right, and I was wrong. Tampa Bay, they've gone over nine straight games. We both liked the game yesterday, but we had differing opinions. Brett liked the over, easy winner. I liked the under, easy loser. And then the Cubs and the Reds both riding four-game over streaks. Looking at the divisions, Boston, Tigers, Rangers in the American League, National League, the Braves, the Cardinals, and the San Francisco Giants. This is the part of the show where Brett Grant and I together put money into your pocket as we together put you on the right side.
That guy that was wrong yesterday wasn't me. I just want you to know that. As we go into that. I think that's I only lose on Tuesday, so watch out today. It's Tuesday. Now, four of my last five games I've given you have been winners, and that's nice. I'm going to go to a baseball game today, involving, I'm going to try and buck a trend. I didn't realize the Reds had four straight overs, but there's a spot here with the Braves and the Reds today. Chris Medlin on the mound for the Braves against Homer Bailey for the Reds. Homer Bailey in his starts this year, four of his starts have gone under the total. He's got a great whip, 1.18. His ERA is not too shabby at 3.3. In his last couple of starts, both road games, by the way, unders in St. Louis and unders in Washington. He lost both games, but lost 4-2 and 1-0. So I think here, Great American Ballpark, while being an offensive ballpark in spots, I think there's some value with the 7.5 in this spot. I'm going to go under the 7.5 with two good pitchers. I look at a 3-2, 4-2 kind of game in this spot between the Reds and the Braves. So I'm going to go under the 7.5.
Brett has been on fire, as he mentioned. Four of his last five plays have gotten there, documented here on KSHP and Vegas Video Network. I do want to address something because I'm big on education. I'm big on value. I bet numbers more than I do teams. Yesterday, that total of the game when we did the show, 7.5, Toronto, Tampa Bay, it was an easy over winner. That isn't what I want to talk about. Not just because I was wrong and you were right, but it has to do with value and seeing it before it happens. We've talked a million times. It's about being on the move early or against it late. It was 7.5 was the total yesterday for that game. By the time the first pitch took place, all the money was on my side, under. From under 7.5, minus 15, minus 20, minus 25, minus 28 cents at Pinnacle in the Islands. It's very, very telling because you want to be on the move early or against it late. Now, Brett has been against the move twice in the last week. He's won both. So there are exceptions to every rule, and Brett Grant is that one exception. At the end of the day, you want to win tickets.
Come follow me, my son.
At the end of the day, you want to make money. You want to cash tickets. But please understand, long term, short term, anything's possible. But long term, you want to respect the betting market, the wise guys, the sharp players that bet a lot of money because there's value. Now, you might think, well, what kind of value are you talking about, Mr. Pritchard? And that's a good question because it fell 15. The over was a bargain. Not really, because why did it close 7.5? Why would you lay under? I played under 7.5 minus 10. It closed 7.5 under minus 28. For instance, if I bet 1,100 to win 1,000, but everyone else is going to have to bet $1,280 to win 1,000. So that's grinding, scalping $180. So I'm getting the best of it. I lost, but never mind that. I'm getting $180 the best of it. I'm laying $1,100 to win 1,000 instead of $1,280 to win 1,000.
Let me ask you a question, because obviously this is what you do for a living. If I make a decision of when I want to bet a game, how do I know? I like my handicapping. I like the situation for me. How do I know which way the money's going to go?
It's a great question. It's important to understand what the opening number is, to understand FTM, follow the money to see where it is now, and then to see if you, it's good. It's a great thing that you're an independent thinker and you have your own opinion, and you can't argue with success. I'm saying respectfully, having done this for 30 years, need to respect the market. And so having said that, the key is to, if you like over 7.5, but it's 7.5 everywhere, there's no need to bet it. Only bet it if you see it moving against you. Well, why would you bet over 7.5 minus 10 when by the time the first pitch was thrown, you could have over 7.5 plus 18?
Right.
20, I mean, there's a big significant difference there.
But when you go to make your bet, though, like the average Joe, we only have a small window. We don't have access to 9 million different places to go shop or drive up and down the strip. We have our little accounts and we want to make the bet. Go, oh, yeah, I like that game. Boom, I'm making the play.
He with the most information has an advantage.
Right.
That's applicable in life. It's certainly applicable in professional sports betting. So it's your money, and I understand there's a recreational value here. I mean, people will bet for action, or they'll bet because they're sick, they're compulsive, they're degenerate. But this is about professional sports betting, and I love the question. At the end of the day, you just want to make money, cash tickets, but at least be aware of what's going on out there. My right side today, I'm looking at an interleague game between the Seattle Mariners around the road taking on the National League Pirates. Harang, Aaron Harang, a righty taking on McDonald, another righty. The ERAs are high. The total for this game is 8. The money coming in on the under. I released it last night, 8 under 15. The money continues to come in this morning. When I left the house, it's 8 under minus 120. I still see value here based on this is interleague, okay? The Seattle Mariners, not a great hitting team. Now their pitcher is going to have to bat. National League, interleague, I think 8 is a bit happy. My money, right side for me, Seattle-Pittsburgh game in Pittsburgh, under the 8, lay the 20 cents, see the cashier.
By the way, there's 5 interleague games today. They're all in National League ballparks. So keep that in mind if you look at those, that pitchers are batting in all 5 of those games.
You're listening to The Odds Couple on KSHP AM 1400 Radio in Las Vegas, Nevada. We're here Monday through Friday from 10 a. to 11 a. My name is Scott Pritchard. I'm a professional sports bettor handicapper featured on my site, PritchardsPicks.com, VegasInsider.com, Tim Donahue's site, which is RefPicks.com. We're live and worldwide simulcast on Vegas Video Network. For Brett Grant, I'm Scott Pritchard.